The following is a CNA podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Conversations. I'm Jamie Ho. If you walk into a supermarket, chances are sustainability will shout out at you more these days. Sustainably farmed fish, coffee that is ethically sourced, and perhaps even pet food made from insects. Green products have no doubt become a significant part of the consumer goods market. In part, this has no doubt been driven by a greater awareness of the impacts of climate change and the drive to turn awareness into action. But human habits are also hard to break, especially when we live in a world where e-commerce continues to grow, where you can buy anything you want in just two or three clicks, and when someone can deliver it within the day. So when it comes to the very act of consuming, is there a gap between what we believe in and what we practice? Can consumers walk the talk on living sustainably? And what does that look like? Does it mean simply buying greener or just buying less? Or is that a hard bridge to cross? With me to talk about this is Sharon Ng, Associate Professor of Marketing, Nanyang Business School. Welcome, Sharon.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to start with this first question. Studies show that awareness of sustainability and climate change have obviously increased, driving sort of like a mindful consumerism and caution over buying products and wastefulness. And you teach at the local university. So give me a sense first, whether you've seen this awareness grow over the years. What are some of the things your students talk about now in this area, your sense of what they think? And maybe, you know, compare it to when you were in school and how things have changed in this period of time.
I think the younger generations are definitely more environmentally conscious. I teach a bunch of kids. They are about 20 years old to 22. In the classes, we talk a lot about sustainability. And usually, I get them to make choices between different products, green products versus non-green products. And if we measure attitude, I would say that it's a significant portion of them definitely support sustainability. They feel that's important and it shifts their behaviors. I can't say for sure, though, whether they really are willing to put the money where it is.
Well, that's the key thing, yeah.
We see these kids after, during break time, they can get drinks. I would ask them, why do you pick up a plastic bag when you don't need it? And you know, the reasons would be, oh, it's convenient, it's easier to carry. But I said, did you consider the fact that it's not environmentally friendly? They say, oh, yeah, I do. But it's just easier. The trade-off is still hard for a lot of us to make. But in general, if you ask just about attitude, I think definitely this generation is way more conscious of the environmental impact of their behavior compared to my generation's. Environment isn't actually quite a conversation, at least not then.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to talk about the trade-offs, and it is an excellent point because it's something that I've been thinking about a lot as well. And I'll use the example of e-commerce. E-commerce has existed, it's grown significantly, it's made it so easy for people to basically consume.
Exactly.
And especially the younger crowd as well. Yes. So they are faced with this potential trade-off, and we buy everything from furniture even to phones and stuff like that. Yes. Do you think then, separate from the kids, that the pandemic itself, in a way, has shifted our approach to consumerism and consuming? In a way, it's actually made it easier. And I wonder whether sometimes with that making it easier, the environmental sustainable consciousness has taken a little bit of a backseat.
It does, at least from my casual observations. There's two parts to it. I don't think attitude-wise, people are becoming less environmentally conscious. I think the pandemic actually highlighted the idea that we are all connected. A disease in one place affects all countries. And therefore, it actually creates this whole belief that we need to take care of each other and we need to take care of the earth. That said, I think at the individual level, when it comes to consumption, because we are all stuck at home, we want to feel good. We buy comfort food. We buy things to pamper ourselves just because we are so bored and we have nothing better to do. We buy online products. We buy takeaways. And if you think about all these things that we've been doing, it's actually really bad for the environment. At the consumption level, at the individual level, people are probably not thinking about it. But if you just measure attitude, I believe that actually the pandemic actually make people more conscious. But the consciousness does not translate. The trade-off is still difficult to make.
Well, that's really the crux of it, isn't it? In that while awareness, while attitudes are trending in the right direction, the crux is whether it actually translates into meaningful action and educated action as well. I'll use the example of what people may think is sort of ethical consumption or green products, right? Mm. So some will say that actually that there's no such thing as a green product. And one of my favorite examples is the cotton tote bag. Yeah. For a while, when people started trending towards a tote bag because they felt it was a bit more environmentally friendly than a plastic bag. But I'm not sure whether people understand the environmental footprint of a tote bag and how many times you got to use that tote bag for it to make sense in terms of emissions and in terms of sustainability and the production of that cotton bag. And therefore, there was this shift away from plastic bags too, which sometimes if you think about it, it may not be such a bad thing as an alternative if you considered what the cotton tote bag brings itself. So that's the thing. Are people firstly aware enough, you think, from your studies mm-hmm. of these trade-offs? And then after that, being even aware, then being able to really make the hard decisions.
I don't think people are necessarily that aware. Most people want to feel good about helping the environment. I mean, the tote bag is an excellent example. In my house, we have tote bags, plenty of tote bags. And at some point, I was telling my kids that we have so many of them, we don't use it. And each of these actually take longer time to biodegrade than compared to a plastic bag. So it's not necessarily a good thing. But that said, the question is, what is the alternative? I've always been telling my students when we teach sustainability, the best solution is to reduce consumption. The best solution is not to consume as much as we have been consuming. If we cannot stop consuming, well, then the next best alternative is to hopefully, through the circular economy, try to reuse the materials and products that we have. Reducing consumption is not something that is structurally embedded in a society. Businesses have no incentive to reduce consumption, to encourage us to reduce consumption. The businesses will try to be as sustainable as they can through various methods, but they're not going to ask you to consume less. Consuming less is not good for business. Neither is it necessarily good for the country's economy, if you will. The hardest choice to make is to reduce consumption, to reduce consumerism, but the structurally, the way our world works, the way the society works, does not support that. Therefore, the next best alternative is at least have some green awareness, at least do something to make the consumption, if we have to consume, a little bit more environmentally friendly.
Yeah, I mean, that's a deep frustration that I have as well, because it would appear to me that what we've been doing in the last decades, even as we've become more environmentally conscious, is that we have been trying to solve a problem related to consumption with just consuming differently and consuming something else.
Exactly.
So whether it is a stainless steel straw versus plastic straws, we've just consumed differently. And again, it's no guarantee that the stainless steel straw is any better than 10 plastic straws that you may have replaced it with.
Exactly. And people buy 10 stainless steel straws.
Exactly. So that's the trick for me. And whether or not when you do your courses, when you speak publicly, do you think there's been enough done to talk about the first priority, which is to reduce consumption? Do you think there's more that can be done? As you said, there are so much economic structural impediments to talking about consuming less. But that's the truth. Can more be done there?
Oh, definitely. But I don't think this is something that one company can solve. It probably requires an entire shift in societal norms. If you think about why we consume so much, from a marketing point of view, we always say that people consume to fulfill some social needs, to fulfill some psychological needs. We consume so that we can celebrate our success. We consume because we see some people having something and we desire that. And we connect our identity to the products that we consume, to the things we buy. So until that piece is resolved, if you will, or at least we temper the way we look at our own identity with the products we buy, that is going to be a hard piece to solve. Because there will always be people who want to buy a better car. You buy things to show. You buy things just to feel good, to pamper yourself. That social norms, with the way we have been identifying ourselves with the products that we purchased, needs to go. If that piece doesn't go, no matter what you try to do, it's still going to be very hard to reduce consumerism. And that's actually what we have been observing for the past decades, that people have been consuming more because as you get more affluent, you can afford it. And so you don't quite think about it. You buy more things. You use that to identify yourself. You buy a bigger house. You buy a bigger car. Now we can go out to restaurants. You eat more expensive food. You eat food that actually probably has more environmental impact to have the cows, to farm. And so all these things comes into picture. But when we consume, we don't think about it. We only think about it when the environment somehow, the context trigger us to think about it. So if I ask, are you supportive? Yes, I am. Nobody will say no. I guarantee you that. And you will never see anybody telling us no. But are you willing to eat less? Not really. Are you willing to buy less? Not all will. Until we disconnect self-identity to products, that's going to be hard to solve.
Yeah, you know, one of the industries that fascinates me the most as well is fashion. And because, as you say, so much of our identity is linked to fashion, and we've seen how the explosion of fast fashion has had such a significant environmental impact and footprint. I'm not sure, again, whether people know the consequences of the fashion industry and the cotton and the materials that go into it. But you see on the fringes movements there in the fashion industry. There are some brands who try to at least say what's needed to be said, who may try to do what's needed to be done. Mm. But do you think that using that industry as an example, there are sparks of potential that the industry itself, certain industries themselves, may say actually the focus should not be on volume of consumption, but the quality of consumption, and I'm willing to go there and push the boundaries? Or do you think the economic structures are so embedded and so stuck that we're not going to be able to move away?
My personal opinion is I think it's pretty much stuck. Until the companies are willing to say that I'm okay making less sales, short of that, I think that would be hard. That's why I think the next best alternative is really to look at the circular economy. And hopefully, if we don't really take so much resources from the earth, we don't pollute the earth as much. And hopefully, through reusing and recycling the materials that we have, we can reduce a little bit on the impact of consumerism. That would be great. But I really don't think structurally right now, at least at this stage, that we're going to see companies saying that, yes, it's okay, consume less. Buy less, no? And we are okay. We can tell investors and our stakeholders that we're doing good for the environment and it's okay that we're making less revenue. I can't see that happening, at least not at this stage. Look at the number of smartphones we are buying, each of us. And we are changing smartphone every 2 years.
I'm slightly more pessimistic, but I was hoping for a positive take from you. But never mind. Let me use another example then. As I introduced this, I spoke about supermarkets, right? Mm. And this whole thing about organic produce is also quite recent.
Yes.
It's all within our lifetimes where we saw this trend towards people consuming differently, knowing full well that organic products have comes with its benefits. And it showed that people were willing to consume differently, consume maybe less, but better. Or at least knowing what they are consuming and therefore making decisions based upon that. Are we not hopeful that some of this can sort of translate elsewhere, especially with the younger, as we now go back to talk about your students and stuff like that? Is this something that governments need to do, society, NGOs? Where does it start from to start these conversations?
Oh, definitely. I'm sure that this younger generations, for example, my students, they will definitely be more supportive of organic products. But one of the caveats is this. A lot of these so-called green products as organic products, they are more expensive. At least the technology to do these products right now is not mature enough such that they are a lower cost or the same price as the regular products. So it can attract people who have the economic means to buy such products, at the same time, feel it is important to support the environment. But that still leaves out a whole group of people who may not be willing to make the financial trade-off. The fact that the organic products cost significantly more on average, I think at this stage, it will have an impact on a small segment of the market that can afford it and feel that's important. But we need more advances in technology such that the price of the organic products will be similar to the price of the regular product, then we can really see a major push towards such consumption.
I'm going to segue and move our conversation maybe a little bit higher level and talk about trends globally and what we can learn for, or at least look out for when we look at countries in the region, for example. And when you talk about consumerism, consuming and consumption, obviously there may be two groups of countries and societies that you can look out for. Obviously, there are the rich economies and rich societies like the United States, like Singapore, which have the highest purchasing power and the ability to change things through consuming. But at the same time, you have rapidly developing countries with huge populations who, similarly, as we've said earlier, aspire to consume. And that's the whole point of moving up from being developing to more developing to developed. Where do you think the challenges are going to be in the long term? Is it possible for us to start looking at some of these developing countries? Is it fair for us to look at their consumption patterns? Or is it more realistic to look at developed countries and developed societies and tell them to take the first actions and to lead the pack, so to speak? Or is it a mixture of both in terms of how we attack the problem of overall consumption patterns?
I don't see that from a financial trade-off perspective. I think if you look at the more affluent countries, the fact that they are more able to pay for that, the more expensive green products, I think that will be one direction you can go. But if we look at just from a consumer attitude perspective, from our research, we don't see a difference between affluent and non-affluent countries. So we have actually conducted surveys in some neighboring countries. So for example, Indonesia's and Malaysia's and some other neighboring countries of Vietnam and such. And we do not see a major difference actually in the attitude towards green consumption. So it's not that the more affluent the country, people are more likely to feel that it's important. In fact, there's a few blips that we've seen that, for example, Indonesia, people are actually quite supportive of sustainable consumption. The difficulty comes when the cost comes in the picture. If you can't afford it, then yes, at the consumption level, if the barriers to entry is too high, if the price difference is too high, you're not going to see it. But if the difference is not significantly higher, I don't think we've noticed that affluent countries necessarily will be more supportive of sustainable consumption compared to non-affluent countries. That's why, to me, I think at the end of the day, the technological piece needs to be solved. If we can make it such that the green products that you see are at least the same price, so that people don't have to make a trade-off. In our research, what we did in one of the studies is we give people the same products. Okay, one is greener, one is not as green, but same price. Almost 90 to 100% of people choose a green product. But the minute I increase the price by 10%, the percentage of people choosing the green product reduced close to 30 to 40%.
It's just 10%. Is that the ceiling?
Okay, this is one sample. So I don't want to say generalize to the whole population. That would not be scientifically correct. But at least from that one study, it reduces quite a lot. So really, it's at the end of the day, I think the attitude, I don't see a difference between affluent and non-affluent countries. Purchased, the conversion, that's the piece that we may see. And that purely is economically driven. The extra 10% could mean quite a bit to a non-affluent country.
Yeah, we're going to start closing off. And you're an educator as well. So obviously, we've spoken about huge structural impediments to changing the mindsets overall within societies as far as consumption is concerned. But you're an educator. Obviously, the most significant efforts will have to be focused on even younger and younger people to imbibe or at least make them aware that there are alternatives to the kind of consumption that we've become used to overall as a society. As you say, whether it's a phone, whether it's a flat, whether it's a car, all these things are part of us as a society in terms of consuming. What would you say if I were to say, try and develop a curriculum or at least something that can start as young as possible to make people more aware, so that by the time you reach a certain age where you become environmentally conscious, when you start thinking about economic theory, right, and suddenly I'm reminded of Y equals to C plus I plus G, that sometimes, you know, the C can be rethought a little bit. How would you design that to insert a little bit different conception into overall consumption?
I'm from NTU. So in NTU, we actually have many courses. First, we have a course for holding on sustainability. And in all the other courses that are not on sustainability, we also insert a couple of lessons on sustainability. So just to get the students to really have some awareness of the impact of consumption, at least for marketing, for example, the impact of consumption on sustainability and how, if they're going to be future business leaders, what are some of the thought process that should come into their mind? If they're going to lead a company, how would their action affects the environment? If you have a positive impact on the environment, potentially leads to a better outcome for the company in the long run. In NTU, we do have a number of courses that look at sustainability already. And we also embed sustainability in most of the classes. At the university level, the students are already fairly mature. They know these issues. So what we are trying to do is to develop a next set of business leaders who are conscious of these issues. Now, if you look at, for example, as my son is in secondary school, they are actually also having classes that talks a little bit about the impact of the environment. They're writing essays about it. From young, if we can just keep reminding the kids the impact of how our behavior influences the environment, we will eventually be able to see a next generation of students and younger generations who are conscious of it. Consciousness doesn't necessarily equate to consumption because the trade-off is still an issue. But at least they are more aware. They are more conscious that their action has impact. And how are they going to convert that to at least reduce their impact on the environment? All we can do at this moment, increase the saliency of the problem, change the mindset. And when the technology is really advanced, where we can actually make the products the same in terms of pricing, in terms of attributes, in terms of features, I can really see the younger generations being more green, being more sustainable and choosing the more sustainable product.
A final question then I have for you. I mean, coming from Nanyang Business School,
yes,
right? Representative of business schools all around the world. In my mind, there seems to be a little bit of a disjuncture as well in the traditional mindset of what a business school is going to teach its students, which obviously, as we say, is built upon basic economic theory of consumption, of economic growth, and building a business through customer consumption, right? That's on the one hand. Increasingly, though, as you say, you're going to build in more and more sustainable elements of it as well. As you design curricula now and in the future, do you think that there will come a point where we realize, you know, the entire structure of how we teach business has to change? Yes, business decisions are one thing, but sustainability must be really part of it. And that may change downstream how business is taught.
Definitely. That's why I said in our courses right now, this is what we've been teaching the students now, is that there are a few major considerations. One is, of course, clearly the financials and economic, but the other piece is actually the company's purpose and the company's role in the society, and sustainability being one. But there are many other broader social impact companies can make in a society. And how, when they make decisions, the best position that you can have is at the intersection of these two, where it makes financial sense. At the same time, you're making a positive impact on society. And companies that can do that has a longer runway into the future. So the thought process cannot purely be a financial and economic position that you're taking. This is something that we have already been teaching. And I definitely think that this trend is going to continue. I don't see how you can move back and just look at a company purely from a commercial point of view. Companies no longer just commercial entities, they're social entities. They're part of the broader society, they're part of the world. And therefore, to be able to think of how the company's role in the broader society is important. It's not something that's upcoming, it's something we are doing. It's something that we have been doing and we will continue to do. That's why we're hoping to educate the next generation of business leaders that understand that business decisions is not just a purely financial or economic decisions. There's also another big piece that you have to start thinking about, which is your company's role, your company's purpose in the society and how it affects the environment.
Going back to something that we said at the start of our conversation, then hopefully this translates to at least consuming less, companies being on the right to do that. But if not that, then consuming very, very much differently. Sharon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Listening to the Climate Conversations, stay up to date on CNA's coverage of climate change on cna.asia. You can find this and other CNA podcasts on our website and on iTunes and Spotify. The team behind this podcast are Crispina Robert, Lin Su Ling, and Aaron Low. I'm Jamie Ho. Till next week.